Hi, and welcome to the Macro Show. We talk macro and try to make sense of markets, but apparently everything goes up before Election Day. I'm your host, Steve Van Meter. I apologize for the little delay in getting the show today. I just got off the phone with industry legend Peter Buchvar of the Buchvar Report. If you don't know who he is, check him out. He's on Twitter. He's been on Real Vision and a new friend of mine. So I know he's not listening, but Peter, it was great to talk to you today. We've got an election special. I'm going to talk about my thesis. It's amazing that some of you got this totally wrong in the comments. Totally wrong. I'm going to explain the whole, like, why Steve doesn't like swing trading thing. And no, it was not a jab at my buddy, Johnny Bravo, at all. Was not. I'm a big fan of Johnny. And, buddy, if you're watching, you know I love you. All right, we're going to talk about the flag. We got an updated flag for the kingdom. We've got that. We've got standard deviation to talk about, market positioning, dollar. I mean, lots of stuff. So let's just start with the beginning. Let's put the crown on and get into what my thesis is. Now, my thesis is just a broad market, you know, full cycle thesis, okay? And right now we're in, well, we'll just call it phase one because that's where we're at. You can reorder the phases, but you can't move them. I mean, you can adjust them around as you need to. But phase one is deflation. And so what happens in deflation is we get a deflationary shock in the markets, which causes treasury yields to go down and bond prices to go up. Now, how do we know what that looks like? Well, it's really simple. We can put a chart of 10-year treasury yields up, and you can see that during recessions, there is usually a move down, a move up, and another move down. And here you can see, now the 70s is kind of interesting because you had to move up and you didn't get a lower low in until later, but you can see in every recession, there's usually a big move down in yields. In fact, here we have in the 90s, yields went down, they counter rallied up, down. And then we get kind of what we're seeing now. A big move down in yields, a little rally back, and then a boom, big move down. Look at the great financial crisis, move down in yields, little counter rally, big drop. And here we have now a move down in yields, the poorest and weakest counter rally in the history of the bond market. And what are the probabilities that it's going to go lower? Well, they're pretty good because that's usually what happens when you can't get a sustainable move higher in yields. They go lower to get, that's why we look at the H.8 data every week. Look at credit growth. There is none. It's in contraction. Okay, so the first move is deflation. So why would I sit and ride through treasuries in this? Because they win in the end. When everything is crumbling down, right? When all the other kingdoms in the land are on fire and then the big monsters are trampling them and all their people are fleeing to the kingdom of bonds and saying, ah, Steve, we've made fun of you for decades and years and maybe even weeks. We want to be your friend and we want to seek, you know, safety inside the walls of the kingdom of bonds. We let them in and then we go out and we pillage and take over their kingdoms. Why is that? Because that's what you do in the next phase, which is the inflation. And I'm going to put in quotes, high inflation. It always feels like it's high inflation, but it's not sustainably high inflation. You get a move higher in inflation because what happens at these points down here, right, in the second move down in bonds, the smart money sells them, and you see this big usual move higher following it. Usually there's a counter move up because the smart money's unloading them. So then the second phase is you see this move up in inflation. And the reason, again, is if you overlay now that 10-year treasury chart with the Wilshire 5000, which is an all cap, you know, kind of has all the U.S. stocks in it. And I use it because the FRED database does not have the full history of the S&P or Dow. What you find out is during recessions, shockingly, stock prices go down when we get that big drawdown in yields. Usually equities drop, and you can see it. We'll zoom in to the more modern times, which most of you are used to looking at. And there it goes. And you see that deflationary shock, crash in stock prices. Deflationary shock, crash in stock prices. Deflationary stock yet to come. There will be a crash in stock prices. That is what hasn't happened yet. So if you're kind of wondering why I'm so chill about hanging out in bonds, is because I know the probabilities of that last move happening down in yields is huge. So if I'm going to take that bet, because I know the next bet is buying inflation sensitive assets when they're dirt cheap. Again, we're going to go out the back of the kingdom, right? As everyone's pouring in the front doors, we're going to shoot. I got an escape tunnel for us. We're going to zip out the back and we're going to take over their kingdoms. That's what's going to happen. Now, that phase usually runs, say, around 3 years. Okay. Now, remember, I said in Friday's video, the broad view is somewhere around a complete 9 to 15 year cycle. That's the whole market cycle, not one position in bonds. So I give the deflation, you know, a 3 to 5 year run. It's usually not 5 years long, but it's closer to 3 to 4. Then there is the phase two, the inflation phase. That's usually around 3 years, maybe a little more, maybe a little less. Then you move into phase three. Now, I've mentioned to some of you that asked, that's a question mark, but in the normal conditions, and I say normal, because there is a lot of belief that the monetary system will be changing in the years to come. Now, it might not, I don't know, but in the normal cycle, this is where you get more moderate inflation. So inflation levels come down, and where do you want to go then? You know, your broad-based equity markets, your energy stocks, things like that, and you ride that out for however long until you get back to the deflation phase. So it's a three-phase cycle and kind of goes over and over. Now, what's interesting about the current setup is, let's say that there is a change in the monetary system, you know, a couple of years down the road, and it will not happen until all the other kingdoms burn to the ground. And then the Fed will come in and try to save it and it won't work. And then when it's proven it won't work, then maybe we'll get a change. Well, if I'm already in inflation-sensitive assets in phase two, then my phase two will just roll into phase three, because we'll assume that perhaps there are changes to the global monetary systems that actually can create inflation. So that's the whole game, is I know in the end, and you've heard me say this, I will win. Why? Because, well, the bond market tells me that's what happens. And if you want to make money long-term in the markets, you need to buy low and sell high. Now, one of the challenges is some of you have been trying to trade my investment thesis. And one of the key things is macro is investing. Now, you've heard me take jabs at swing trading. It has nothing to do with my buddy Johnny Bravo. Absolutely nothing. Now, because he and I have talked about the difference. He's a swing trader, means he's looking for shorter term moves in the market, whereas I'm looking for longer term moves in the market. One is investing, one is trading. See, I can go back to the dot-com bubble where people were day traders. And then those people became house flippers. And now they're swing traders. It's always the same thing. It's short-term moves. And what's really key, and something Peter and I just talked about, is why are people like Warren Buffett so successful in investing? Because their time horizon is so much longer than everyone else's that they're willing to wait it out. And that's the same thing with this. So my phase, you know, my deflationary phase of my macro thesis, I'm willing to ride through these up and downs of the bond market because I know that final move comes and there's my exit point. I don't know what day it's coming. I just know it will come. And all I have to do is just wade through the noise to get there. And that is really important. So it's nothing, again, against my friend Johnny Bravo. He's a brilliant businessman, fantastic teacher, and even better friend. Bromance, right? He's just a great guy all around. And, you know, we just have a difference of how we handle our money when it comes to investing versus trading. And that's totally cool. It's just very difficult if you're trying to trade against a long-term thesis, is because a long-term thesis will generally beat you. That's the problem. So if you are trying to trade my macro thesis, stick with whatever trading principles you use and don't deviate from them. Okay. That's the best advice I can give you on that. All right. So let's move on and talk about, economic data. We got to look at today's economic data and get that out of the way. We got manufacturing PMI. This is from a company called Market, M-A-R-K-I-T, not M-A-R-K-E-T. And the manufacturing PMI, and I do believe that Market gets it more accurate than the ISM. And let's just see, I didn't mean to do that. Make sure this is big enough. It came in at 53.4, which is a slight expansion over the prior month. So what we're learning from the Market data is that the manufacturing sector in the US, the rate of growth is slow. And it looks like it does around the rest of the world. the rate of growth has slowed down, and is losing momentum. So we look at construction spending, which is a month behind. It came in at 0.3%, so that was a little bit low for the month. The year over year, I believe, also declined. Now, there's a company called ISM. They are the air quotes official, not government-sponsored, official manufacturing report. And it came in real high at 59.3. So this would tell me a solid expansionary number. I mean, then I look at the new orders, it's 67.9. That's telling me there's a big demand in new orders. And then I look at, prices, 65.5. It's telling you prices are rising. So if you look at this report and say, wow, there's a lot of new orders, it's driving prices up. The U.S. manufacturing sector is doing extremely well relative to what market is telling us. And what I actually believe is something a little bit different is happening here. There's no doubt there are new orders coming in. And there's no doubt that businesses are obviously willing to pay higher prices because they're trying to rebuild their inventories. But there's not a urgency to get that inventory. I think that's the big difference here, because if we look at the employment, last month it was effectively unchanged. This month it's saying a slight expansion at 53.2. So if we zoom into the employment data, what we find is manufacturers aren't really hiring. So going back to May, there was a big implosion in employment in the manufacturing sector. In June, there was a nearly equally large implosion, so people going home. And then we come up to the more recent months, August, slight contraction. September, slight contraction. October, slight contraction. So we're now seeing the very first expansion of employment since May. Everything else has been either get rid of employees or unchanged, and now we're getting a slight expansion. So what is that telling you? Is that manufacturers are seeing all these new orders come in, they're seeing these higher prices, and they're still not hiring. They're still not hiring. That tells us there is no urgency in all of these orders. Or that the manufacturers believe that these orders are one-off, right? That they're coming in, but once they're filled, there's no more. So they're not trying to rush through them. So that to me is a big, big tell. All right, so nothing else in the economic data today. Here is the updated flag, thanks to Zero Hedge. And I found out how to draw a straight line. I know many of you are frankly shocked by that, but I finally figured out how to do that. And here is the updated flag. We'll make it a little, That was not the button I was looking for. And frankly, I'm not sure how to get out of that mode. That's embarrassing. I have no clue what I did to my browser, which is unfortunately a problem because one of these buttons. Wow, okay. Whew. I told you this is recorded live. I meant to hit this button here. So what is, now we do have a serious problem here. And I have to, okay. So while we monkey through Steve's inability to use his own computer, what we find is the net speculative short position in the 30-year bond market went to a new all-time low. Now this is a 4 standard deviation event. And friend of the show, Chris Dark, as he's watching, I don't know if he is, but if I get this wrong, he will actually publicly shame me on Twitter. And, maybe this will fix it. Nope. That's, how do we get out of this mode? I don't know. But anyways, here is a bell curve. 1 standard deviation, 2 standard deviation, 3 standard deviation, 4 standard deviations. Now, what does that tell you? Other than I have no idea how to get back to the prior tab because I have no idea what I've done to this thing. And I will just keep hitting buttons until maybe I get lucky here. What does that tell you as a 4 standard deviation event? It is unlikely to occur in your lifetime. Now it is happening. The 30-year bond market has been around 43 and a half years. Meaning that if everyone thinks that the speculators are right, I don't, if they, but if you do, keep in mind that the probabilities of this happening again in any of our lifetimes who are watching the show right now is probably pretty darn close to zero. So do you think that the speculators are right and we're going to see a 5, maybe 6 standard deviation event in short? Probably not. It's very unlikely. So keep in mind, when the markets are all tilted to one side of the fence, it usually moves the other way. Now, of course, we're seeing, you know, hearing noise about, well, you know, election and this and that. Look, you have people offside the market. Now, I want you to be aware that this bet against the market, not only is it a 4 standard deviation event, which is huge, it occurred during a time of massive treasury issuance. And when foreign investors, and I went and looked, have been, you know, and this includes central banks, have been increasing their purchase of treasury securities at a rate of about 2 to 3% on a year-over-year basis. Not at all. So there, I mean, hardly any growth there. So despite all this new supply, despite the fact that foreign investors aren't really adding to their purchases, and there's a 4 deviation event of selling in the futures and options market, the best we can get out of the 30-year treasury yield is a move up to 1.6 to 1.65%. If anything, my friends, that is a testament to the robustness of quantitative easing, which we know causes treasury yields to go lower. So the fact is, we're only doing, and it's still a big number, $120 billion a month of QE, and it has suppressed. Again, let me remind you, one of the weakest growths of foreign investment in U.S. Treasuries, a massive issuance, I mean, largest issuance probably in the history of the bond market, and a 4 standard deviation net short. And that's the bet on higher interest rates? Yeah. Now you know why I don't care about the recent selling in the bond market, because again, I can outweigh this event. I know how it plays back. Now, one thing I do love is the community that we have here on this show, because I do read your comments, as many of them I can, and many of you engage on Twitter. And today, one of the fans of the show sent me this article, because see, you help find things that I either miss or don't see, or you try to find things, which is most popular, about where I'm wrong. Treasury dials back estimates for U.S. borrowing as stimulus talks stall. Federal government is expected to borrow $617 billion from October through December, less than the $1.216 trillion estimated earlier. Now, this is great news because, as a person posted on Twitter said, does this mean, you know, the demand, if it remains constant on lower supply, is bullish for the bond market? And it does, because the Fed will get confirmation on Thursday, of course. It's been consistent about saying we're going to do $120 billion a month baseline. So if that QE has done all this work to, again, negate a 4 standard deviation event, a lack of foreign investment, and massive issuance, what do you think is going to happen when the 4 standard deviation can't get much bigger, when foreign investors say don't change what they're going to do, and the issuance drops? That's got to be super bullish for the bond market going into the end of the year. I think that's really, really cool. So thank you to whoever sent that. I appreciate that. All right, let's take a look at the rest of the futures market and look at how things are positioned going in from the last election to this election. And I think that's pretty worthwhile to look at. Now, if we look at the 10-year treasury, we see virtually no change in the speculative positioning. Speculators are still slightly long, but let's go and focus on the long bond, right? Because this, you know, this is where all the interest is at. The largest speculative short position in history, 4 standard deviation, probably will never happen again. But let's go back to the last election and back here in, say, roughly November. If you look at the picture here, what you find is that the market was short going into the election. So speculators thought interest rates were going down, and then the election happened and interest rates, or they thought interest rates were going higher. I'm sorry, they were short the bond market, and turns out interest rates went down and they end up having to go long. Now, isn't that interesting? So here we are today, market is super short and everyone thinks interest rates can only go up. Yeah, well, we'll see about that. Now let's move forward. Now, what was the other dynamic going on here? Well, the Fed had just started raising interest rates. So they were setting the tone for higher yields. And if we look at domestic bank tightening, which I have no idea why this chart is doing what it's doing, so we'll refresh it, probably because I goofed my screen up and hit the wrong button. If we go back to 2016, what do we find? That, you know, tightening standards were fairly neutral and then were declining after that. So we see rates go down, we see tightening standards go down, and we see a market that starts to chase bond prices higher. Now, you see that the speculators went long here, but now what happens going into late 2017, yields start to rise. Now, why are they rising here when speculators are long? Because the Fed now starts quantitative tightening. And what does quantitative tightening do? It causes yields to rise. And then as we go into 18, you see the real power of quantitative tightening against massive short selling. It really drove yields up. So again, when you look at the power of QE right now, what it's done to suppress the long rate is quite impressive. Now, the other factor coming out of this election 4 years ago is a lot of Republicans were sitting in cash, bonds, and gold and other defensive assets. Upon President Trump's win, they sold all those and started buying risk assets and did something else. They went out and borrowed money and spent it. Now the question you should ask yourself now is, are people in a position to go out and borrow and spend? Well, the banks are telling you no. That's why they have lending standards so tight. You know, there's over 20 million people on unemployment. We're going into the winter. The case counts are rising and more businesses are expected to fail. More people are likely to lose their job because there won't be any form of stimulus to help keep people afloat probably until early next year. That is not the backdrop for sending people, you know, for getting money out into the economy. Let's take a look at crude oil. Going back in elections, speculative positioning was pretty low. And then as economic demand came back, consumers started spending, oil prices went up. So now people are positioned again long crude, believing that energy prices are going to go higher in a period where there is just no demand. I mean, oil is what, around $37 a barrel today? It's not a big profit center for oil companies, which is why they're laying off. How about the S&P? You have one of the longest long positions in 2 years going into the election. Where were they last time? They were short the market going into the election. Now they're long. You can almost sense that whatever's going on in the speculative positioning is probably going to be do the opposite, and that's going to be the real outcome. How about the euro? We're seeing speculative positioning coming down. And where was it going in the election? It was short. So what if that flipped? Well, that would be very bullish for the dollar and very bearish for gold. How about gold positions? You looking back in October, they were, again, 16. They were really low. Today, they're fairly high. Will we see a flip on these positions? How about the NASDAQ? Slightly short, not really big positioning here on the NASDAQ. And back then, they were long, very, very long tech stocks going into the election. How about the small caps? They were short going into the election and then came out shooting out real long. Today, they're long going into the election. How about the dollar? Look at the position of dollar. The dollar was super long going into the, I mean, speculators were long and then massively increased their longs after the election, driving the dollar higher. Today, they're short. And what usually happens after speculators are short, it goes the other way. And how about volatility? Well, going into the election, they were not as short volatility. And then we see there was a big spike, kind of a spike in volatility, and speculators went shorter, driving equity prices up. Now they're fairly short with volatility sitting up. And high, you know, at this really critical juncture, as we've looked at on the chart show on Friday, and if we take a look at VIX, it's at a critical juncture because this is where people have been aggressively shorting volatility at these levels right here. When they're right, that's a boom for equity prices. If they're wrong, it's setting up a massive move higher. So it's kind of interesting that you can look at the speculative positioning. It almost tells you just do the opposite, because if you think about it, what are the probabilities that a 4 standard deviation net short position in the long bond is going to lead to a massive spike in yields when it hasn't done it yet? That's what's interesting. So maybe there's going to be some volatility in the bond market after election. It would certainly be interesting. It wouldn't surprise me but it tells you where the natural trend of this is likely to go. Now, there'll be no QE on Wednesday and Thursday as the Fed is meeting with their announcement on Thursday, and then QE resumes on Friday. So we'll certainly cover the Fed meeting on Friday instead of under its normal position. I guess they're taking a day off to vote, but be sure to like the pre-election special and the raising of the new flag of the four standard deviation short. So you now know how rare this is, how rare a positioning this is. And again, everyone thinks, depending on, who gets in office, that suddenly creates inflation. Well, I'll leave you with this. Stimulus does not lead to inflation. All it does is take dollars from those who have it and gives it to those who do. Now, why do we have recessions? Because there is a dollar shortage. And when you have a dollar shortage and there's lots of debt, whether it be margin debt, house debt, credit card debt, business debt, doesn't matter. It's like a game of musical chairs. The notion is that in the game of musical chairs, you take chairs out, but somehow stimulus creates a whole bunch of new chairs. It does, and it takes chairs from people who have them and puts them into the game, leaving them with fewer chairs to play with. If there is not a creation of money or is not moving through the system fast enough, as a velocity of M2 says it's not, then the most likely outcome of this whole situation is an insolvency event or, same difference, a deflationary shock leading to higher dollar, lower yields, or stock prices. I'll see you on Wednesday. We'll be interested to see if we have a new president. Then I'm your host, Steve Van Meter. Thanks for watching, and on to the disclosure. The content of this video is provided as educational information only. It's not intended to provide investor and other advice. Materials is not to be construed as a recommendation or solicitation by Social Security, financial instrument, or participate in a particular trading strategy. This video was prepared by Steve Van Meter. Personal capacity opinion expresses via that I'm going to do not reflect the view of Alice Financial Advising or Steve Van Meter Financial.